On his deathbed, Louis Pasteur, the father of germs, was said to have said, "The germ is nothing. The terroir is everything." Pasteur's famous recant leads us to ask, which is most responsible for disease, the bug or the body?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1253rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Dijon who are streaming the podcast from its home at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, the signs say science is real. No doubt Napoleon the Pig would follow that up with, but some science is more real than others. For a jolt, consider the science of electricity. In the 1880s, two scientists fought a war of currents over whose electrical science would prevail. Thomas Edison advocated for the direct current, while Nikola Tesla held forth for the alternating current. Though Edison became rich and famous as the founder of General Electric, and Tesla died alone and destitute, it was Tesla's science that paved the way for modern power and communication systems. And while Edison and Tesla contended over the science of electricity in America, Louis Pasteur and Antoine Béchamp fought it out over the science of disease in France. Pasteur, of course, achieved fame and fortune as the father of the germ theory of disease, the science of which held that diseases were caused by germs. Béchamp's science, on the other hand, maintained that diseases were caused by a breakdown of the body's innate defenses. Pasteur's science said disease could be cured, if not prevented, by killing the germs. Pasteur's science became the economic foundation of modern medicine with all its drugs and vaccines. Béchamp's science, which advocated for the social responsibility of healthy living, made no one rich, and so he and his science were relegated to the dustbin of history. And today, here we are in the here and now, and along comes the made-in-China novel coronavirus, with its attendant promises of new drugs and vaccines. And so we wonder, whose science of disease is most real, Louis Pasteur's or Antoine Béchamp's? Here to help us find an answer, we have one of my favorite contrarians. She is Sally Fallon Morrell, who's the founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and co-founder of the Contagion Myth. Welcome back, Sally.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael. It's always a lot of fun to be on your show.
Well, you know, this is your eighth appearance on the show.
Is it really?
Yeah, oh, my goodness. Incredible. You're more than anybody else. And I think it's because you're always such a great contrarian. I'm looking at the things that we've talked about. We've talked about soy and sperm count.
Yes.
We've talked about bone tea, some of which I have right before me today.
Yeah.
We've talked about aspartame in milk, and we've talked about food safety, and we talked about saturated fats, and we talked about milk. But, you know, I think the best example of your contrarian nature is that for over 50 years, the American Heart Association, using the best science money could buy, went to war against saturated fats. And they just, if you eat saturated fats, you're going to get cholesterol in your body, and you're gonna have a heart attack, and you're going to die. So instead of eating real fats, we want you to eat the stuff called olestra and or something.
Or just vegetable oil.
Vegetable oils, or, which is worse, could be worse. But so for many, many years, that seemed to be the case. And then along comes Sally Fallon Morrell and the Weston A. Price Foundation. And Sally says, look, if saturated fats were bad, there wouldn't be mother's milk.
Yeah, right, right.
And so I think you're winning that war.
I think little by little, well, it's always two steps forward, one step back, but people are eating more butter. We have lots of people using lard now and all the wonderful healthy fats. And one of the points that I make in the book that Tom Cowan and I did together, The Contagion Myth, is that saturated fats can really protect you from what's actually making us sick.
Yes, and I think I have come to believe you because I am a fan of butter, but I've always been a fan of butter, and I've always been a fan of bacon, and so you're telling me everything I want to hear.
Well, right. Well, the nice thing about the diet that we advocate is there's no renunciation in this diet. You can have pretty much everything as long as it's real food, real ingredients, homemade, et cetera. And are you really having listeners from Dijon, France listening?
Well, from everywhere, actually.
That's good news for the French diet, the French paradox, because that is a healthy diet. The way that people in Europe have eaten for centuries is the way that we should eat. The only thing we need to be careful of is all the new stuff, the sugar, the vegetable oils, the additives, et cetera.
Yeah, and I was making a joke about olestra, which is a synthetic fat. And it seemed to be, with which they made these synthetic cookies called Snackwells, which you could eat and you would get no cholesterol and no fat.
Right, you'd be running to the bathroom every 5 minutes, too.
And it didn't last very long. I haven't seen
olestra. Olestra has, gone the way of the dinosaurs. That one was so bad. That was just such a bad additive.
Well, we unfortunately were not able to bring your associate along with us today. Would you introduce Dr. Tom for us as well?
Yes, Dr. Cowan and I have worked together for 20 years. He has been with my first supporter and advocate, founding board member of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and a wonderful holistic physician who has now retired and wants to do more teaching and so forth. And our first project has been this book, The Contagion Myth, in which we debunk the idea of a coronavirus, debunk the idea that some virus is making us sick. However, we do not debunk the idea that people are getting sick. We're not saying that this is just a bad version of the flu. It's a real disease. It's very serious. It's killing people. And our theory is, and we think it's a good theory, is that this is due to the rollout of fifth generation wireless, 5G, which is basically microwaves. Mm-hmm. And this really messes up your oxygen carrying capacity in your body.
Okay, before we go there, I'd like to take you back 20 years to mm-hmm. that day that you and Tom were sitting under the apple tree and the apple did indeed fall on both of your heads, and you said, let's start the Weston A. Price Foundation. What led you to that epiphany?
Well, actually, it was Mary Enig, who is my co-author for Nourishing Traditions, and Nourishing Traditions came out in 1996, and then we said, well, we really need to some kind of organization that has no ties with the food industry, has no ties with the government, and that keeps people abreast of the science as it's coming out. So we set up the foundation, and naturally we asked Tom to be a board member because, Tom was the first medical person to recognize the value of our book.
And, I had the honor of attending a Weston A. Price Foundation convention, and what I saw there was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. The whole convention was filled with young nursing mothers, each of which had a big smile on their face.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is truly the most precious thing in the world to see. So many nursing mothers were so happy.
Our emphasis has always been on healthy babies, how to eat before you become pregnant, during your pregnancy, during breastfeeding, and how to nourish the child as it grows for optimal health, because that period when the body is being conceived and formed is the critical period for the best possible nutrition.
And you and Dr. Tom wrote a book about that, which is called?
The Nourishing Traditions Book of Baby and Child Care, which is a what they call a perennial in publishing. It just kind of sells and sells because I think people realize what good advice is in the book.
Well, and what important advice, not just advice. So, a really big deal. So, before we get into the COVID, I'd like to begin the introduction of the Pasteur versus Bechamp conflict. Did I pronounce Bechamp right?
Bechamp.
Okay, good. So, two different directions, a fork in the road, and Pasteur thought it was the germs, and Bechamp thought it was the body. Could you pull that together for us a little bit?
Yes. Well, Pasteur was the father of the germ theory. He and Robert Koch in Germany, and they basically said, for every disease, you have a germ, and the germ attacks you and makes you sick, and this is where the theory of contagion comes from. And they also postulated that you could take what they called attenuated version of these germs and make a vaccine and give that to people, and then they would develop an immunity to the disease. So that's the germ theory. And the problem is that he could never make that work in his laboratory. Now, he didn't say that to the public, but we have his notes, his private notes, and he was very frustrated. He couldn't just take a bacteria and introduce it into an animal the normal way, like breathing on it or spraying it up his nose, and make the animal sick. He was never able to do that. So what he did was come up with what he called virulent, so virulent anthrax, virulent rabies, which he produced by kind of culturing the organism in tissue that had been starved and poisoned, often running it through several animals. And then, to make sure it made the animal sick, the final animal who got this, he often drilled a hole in its brain and injected it into the brain. Yeah, that did make a lot of animals sick, but it certainly wasn't the bacteria.
So, in essence, his theory was, well, you take these bugs, which in his case would have been bacteria, because he probably didn't even know about viruses then, did he?
No, he didn't. He speculated that, because there were some things he couldn't even find a bacteria. I think rabies was one of them. And he speculated that, well, it must be smaller than bacteria. And, you know, in the 1930s, when they had electron microscope, they could see these little round things inside and outside of the cell. And they speculated that this is what Pasteur meant, and they immediately called these things virus, which means poison. So they immediately assumed that these little things that they were seeing were poison and that they came from outside of the cell and kind of hijacked the cell and got inside.
Okay, with that, we're going to take a quick break, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Sally Fallon Morrell, founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and co-author of The Contagion Myth. Did I say contagion myth? Right back. Do stay tuned after these very important messages.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best Liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it, roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. ordered your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, I did say myth. The contagion myth, and the author of the authoress of the contagion myth, one of the co-author at least, Sally Fallon Morrell, is with us today, and we're talking about the science of disease and which science do you think is most real? The science of the germ as presented by Louis Pasteur, or that of the body as presented by Antoine Béchamp? Now, we've heard that Pasteur looked at the germ and said it's that little bug that's causing all the problem. Béchamp did not think that at all. He pointed in a different... He said the terroir, the terrain.
The terroir. And he saw through the microscope that under certain conditions, then you'd get certain types of germs. And we now know that germs are there to clean up dead tissue. They're the garbage collectors. They have many, many other roles, but they don't kill the tissue. They clean up the tissue. It's just like if you saw a dog in the road eaten by a dead dog with maggots all over it, you would never assume that the maggots killed the dog. We know that they're there to clean up the dead tissue. Mm-hmm. So it's a very an assumption, which, by the way, has not ever been proved for any disease. We don't have studies showing that bacteria cause any disease. And the germ theory really kind of inhibited or slowed down a lot of research. A good example is scurvy, which was considered to be an infectious disease. After all, you had all these men on the ship, and one after another, they started getting sick, and it was assumed that one man was giving it to the next.
That would be the contagion, right?
Yes, and I can understand why people would assume that. They didn't know about nutrition. And, you know, when the men left the ship, they got well because they weren't infecting each other. That was the assumption. But now we know that scurvy is caused by vitamin C deficiency and that it's not at all contagious. Similarly with pellagra, that was considered a contagious disease because a lot of people in the same communities would get pellagra. They had the same nutritional deficiencies. And we know now that it's not a contagious disease. But it took a long time for medical people to realize that. They were so hooked on this germ theory.
Because it was very simple.
It was so simple, yes. And then you could, you know, make a drug or vaccine and make some money.
Now,
there's not a lot of money in the cleanup.
Yeah, and that leads me to an observation I mentioned the conflict of science over electricity and that of disease. And I happen to notice that both are characterized by money. Edison knew how to make money and and Pasteur's science of the germ really led to the foundation of the modern pharmaceutical industry and medicine. Am I wrong?
For example, he claimed that he had this vaccine for rabies, and he made a lot of money on this rabies vaccine, but it didn't last long because the animals all got sick and died from the vaccine. So it only lasted a few years till they stopped doing this his rabies vaccine.
Now, going back to Béchamp described a terroir of the human body that many people really didn't even think possible, because it was animated by all kinds of critters that we didn't think about.
Well, and he was, you know, we didn't know much about nutrition in those days, or even about poisoning. I wrote a blog on anthrax, and I make the argument that anthrax is really arsenic poisoning because they were using arsenic in the sheep dips. And once they stopped using arsenic in the sheep dips, anthrax went away. Now considered a very rare disease. And not even Béchamp figured that one out. So they were both pre-nutritional science. The really great advances that we had in science came in the early 1900s. in the field of nutrition. First, they discovered vitamin A, then vitamin D, and the B vitamins and vitamin C and so forth. And, you know, that has led to tremendous insight in what the body needs to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. And Bechamp made the observation that one should tend the body, I guess,
yes,
as one should tend a garden, right?
Right. So they advocated fresh air, getting out in the sun, cleanliness. They really didn't understand the diet part very well yet, mm-hmm. but they definitely knew that you got a lot of disease in crowded conditions and in conditions of poor sanitation.
There you go. Well, and so here we are in modern times where we know everything about everything, and along comes the made in China coronavirus, a novel coronavirus, and novel means nobody knows what the hell it is.
Yeah, new, and they still don't know. One of the points that we make in the book is that this so-called virus has not been properly isolated, purified, and characterized. And people have sent us lots of studies that have virus isolates, isolation of the coronavirus in the title. But when you actually read the paper, you find that they have not isolated the coronavirus.
So we don't even know what it is or what it looks like.
We don't know what it is. What they do is they create this kind of mush of cellular material, debris, antibiotics, poisons, and, of course, the original bodily fluids of the animal or the person who's sick. And then they get some of the genetics, fingerprints from this, but they get maybe 30 or 40 of the genes, but the whole virus is about 30,000. So to characterize it, they kind of guess. They use a computer program to characterize it.
Oh, they project.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called genome sequencing. I'm sure you've heard that mm-hmm. phrase. But it's just a guess. And then different computers will get different sequences, and so then they vote on it. They do it by consensus. This is not science. I don't know what you'd call this, but it's not science.
Well, it's somebody's science, but hopefully not our science.
Yeah.
So Harvard doctor Justin Yang, to determine how the COVID was affecting grocery store workers, he had his students swab 104 employees of a local Boston grocer's, and he found 20% of them to test positive for coronavirus. And 76% of the 20% showed no symptoms of the virus.
Yeah.
However, 91% of those who tested positive for coronavirus had direct contact with customers of the store. And so the good Harvard doctor determined that those who met with people were five times more likely to contract coronavirus than those who were able to socially distance. So if that is the case, how can you say there would be that contagion would be a myth?
Well, in the first place, the test itself is completely worthless. It doesn't tell you anything. It's picking up snippets of genetic material, some of which comes from human, is identical to what's in human chromosomes. And you can set the test to get a positive or negative depending on how many iterations the test goes through. The tests are 100% worthless. They mean nothing. And I think the proof is you've got all these people who test positive but have no symptoms. So they're called asymptomatic. I mean, if the test is saying you have this coronavirus and this coronavirus is so deadly, then you ought to be having symptoms. But they're not having symptoms. So you really can't say anything. You can't use this test for anything.
And if you can't use the test for anything, what can you say about it?
Yeah, I would guess that the people having contact with the customers were wearing masks. And the masks make you more vulnerable to disease because they create hypoxia. So, there's all kinds of explanations for why those who had contact with the customers were quote-unquote testing positive or actually had symptoms.
You wonder about that, too, because those people who are working in the back office probably aren't wearing masks.
Probably not. You just don't know. The ones maybe with contact with customers might be having more exposure to cell phones, to 5G in some way. We just don't know.
Okay.
They're not asking the right questions because it's just like with the scurvy thing. Because they were so fixated on the germ theory, they don't ask the right questions.
So in essence, what you're saying is that you can't prove a contagion in the transmission of the coronavirus because you can't even tell if it's coronavirus or not.
Well, you don't have a virus. Let's step back, Michael, because the thing that really opened my eyes to what's going on is the Spanish flu, and this was in the book called The Invisible Rainbow by Arthur Furstenberg. The Spanish flu killed 50 million people worldwide. And the U.S. Public Health Service actually did contagion studies. They took sick people and they had them breathe on well people, cough on well people. They injected spitum from the sick people into the well people. They injected the blood from the sick people into the well people. They could not make any of these well people sick from this kind of contact. You know,
really?
Yeah, there was no contagion. And so that
of the Spanish flu?
Of the Spanish flu. They could not prove that it was contagious. And yet so many people were breaking out, were getting the Spanish flu, often in the same place. So, you know, you would assume that it was contagious. But they could not prove contagion. So what was it? Well, Furstenberg believes it was the rollout of radio worldwide. And the radio towers were mainly on military bases. And this was a new pulsed frequency that the human body was not used to. Then they made it worse by giving them aspirin, and a lot of them had some very serious experimental vaccines, so that made them very vulnerable. In any event, all these factors together was what were causing the deaths, and it wasn't contagion. They didn't find a virus either, or a bacteria.
So you do not argue that there is a germ that, under certain circumstances, can cause a disease?
Under certain circumstances, germs under certain circumstances produce poisons. And the poisons, they're called endotoxins, and they can cause disease. But it is not the germs causing the disease. It's the dying tissue that the germs come to, you know, get rid of.
So
also in the gut, if you know, we have bacteria in our gut. These bacteria are essential to life. But if you're putting all kinds of toxins into your gut, these bacteria are likely to produce some toxins. A very good example is breakfast cereals will completely disrupt the flora of the gut and produce neurotoxins in the gut.
Something tells me we're going to be discussing glyphosate here.
Well, that's another one. The glyphosate is a toxin to flora and will kill the good bacteria in your gut.
So the situation seems to be turning toward the Bichamp camp. In that,
well, yes,
we're doing something wrong with our body.
Exactly. We're not eating properly, and right now we're being exposed to a lot of EMF, electromagnetic fields, radiation that the body just can't deal with.
Is it because we can't deal with it or because the body does not know how to deal with it?
Well, I think it's both, and this is very interesting when you say does not know, because, you know, obviously we have gotten used to radio.
Radio station,
yeah, right.
And it's right underneath these giant towers, and so I go, oh my goodness, I'm toast because I'm being fried all the time, but
yeah.
I don't seem to be.
No, you seem to be thriving. But I would give you an example. My husband during the war was did Morse code on a Navy ship, and it was in, you know, this room where all these Morse code was coming in. I guess Morse code is radio. I think it is.
Sure.
And he said that he got sick, really sick, with pneumonia twice. And a lot of people got sick. And these are big, strapping, healthy New Zealand guys. But he said the interesting thing was there was so much anger and outbursts, and people went kind of crazy. And it was known that this happened with the telegraph operators.
Mm-hmm. So this is a new technology. It relatively just came in. And the human body is going, what is this? And I can remember a lot, having lived on an aircraft carrier, that everybody had these new tape recorders. And every time they would record something, the ship's radar would sweep around it and go, eek.
Really? Yeah.
And so when people would keep recording off of each other's tape, it would go, and the recording would be totally spoiled. But
what's really interesting here is, if we've adjusted to radio, how did we adjust?
Ah.
And that's where we get into these viruses, which are called poisons. But actually, what viruses are exosomes that are created inside the cell. Exosomes are little packets of genetic material.
Can you hold on to this? Because we're going to have to take a quick break, because this is very important and very interesting. Yes. So this is something we will pick up when we come back. Michael Olson, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about the science of disease. Which science is right? Is it the science of Pasteur, or is it the science of Bechamp? We're with Sally Fallon Morrell, founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and co-author of The Contagion Myth. Yes, I said myth. Is that true?
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
New Farms' Bob Hofstetter.
MetroFarm is filled with marketing and business management basics that entertain and enlighten. Case studies show how successful MetroFarmers persist and prosper.
Cheesemaker Todd Shriver.
Metro Farm is a well-researched one-stop guide to the business of small acreage farming. There is so much to this book I've found helpful.
Engineer S.M. Smith.
Metro Farm's business information alone is more informative and helpful than most books that specialize in business. Get this book. You will not be disappointed.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour. We're talking about those little viruses that eat up the dead things in our body. And I am reminded of a radio show I did some time ago called, and the subject was autophagy. Which the strong eat the weak.
Yeah.
Is that what you're kind of talking about?
Well, no. Okay. It's the bacteria that will come and just clean up dead tissue. But the viruses are, you know, a 1/1000th of the size of bacteria. And they originate in the cell when the cell is being stressed or attacked. And that could be poisons. It could be electromagnetic radiation. It could be lack of nutrients. It could be fear. All of these conditions cause the body to create these little exosomes, and they are packets of genetic material enveloped in a protein coating, and they have little receptors on the outside.
Are they living?
And
are they?
They are not living. They are. They're like little walkie-talkies, maybe, that your body produces.
So if they're not living, we can't kill them.
They go away if your body doesn't need them. So what they do is they surround a bit of poison or a bit of dead tissue or whatever, and they take it out of the cell. But they also travel to other cells, and they have little those little fuzzy things sticking out. They attach to the ACE2 receptors, and they say, "Hey, I've got a message for you. This we've got this new situation, and I'm buzzing my DNA to send you a message of what we need to do to adjust." And so rather than being the enemy and something that we should fear, these little exosomes are our great friends. They are nature's way of allowing us to adjust to new environments, new situations, electromagnetic radiation. And this is why when people take antivirals, they get so sick, because they are suppressing nature's way of allowing us to adjust.
Wow.
Now, whether these exosomes are capable of getting us to adjust to 5G, that we don't know. That's the big question.
So 5G represents a huge change in the way we're going about doing things. And so what happened when they turned on the 5G in Wuhan, China?
Right. So they turned on 5G in Wuhan in, I think it was late November 1999. They turned on 10,000 base stations. That's more than there were in the whole United States. And this is all in one city. And this was to track people, to track cars, the totalitarian dream of complete control is in this 5G. And by the way, this was supposedly started at this fish market. And there was a picture of this fish market in the New Yorker recently, and you could see the little 5G emitters on the, the poles and on the side of the building. They were all there. So anyway, a whole bunch of people instantly got sick. There, you can find these videos of cell phone videos of people just collapsing in the street. They are shaking, twitching, like they're having seizures, and then they die. So you immediately got a lot of people sick, and they rolled out the virus theory to explain this. The next place you saw a lot of illness was in Europe, especially in northern Italy, where they had blanketed with 5G and where things are very polluted. Same with Wuhan. The millimeter waves seem to be more harmful when there's a lot of particulates in the air, a lot of pollution.
Because things to bounce off on.
The things to bounce off of, exactly. And one of the interesting factoids we found in doing this book, the country with the most cases of COVID per population, any guess?
Per population, I don't know.
It's a little country of San Marino on the coast of Italy. And this little country, I guess, has had 5G for the longest of any country in the world, and it's had the most COVID cases. So there's a lot of epidemiology that points to the 5G being the main culprit here. And does that prove this? No, it doesn't. But we also have a lot of studies dating back to the 1970s done by the Soviets, done by the U.S. Navy, which show these same kind of effects that we're seeing today from exposure to millimeter waves, basically microwaves. Then it came to New York, where that was the first city where they turned on 5G, and then it went to other large American cities, and now it's as this is deployed in the rural areas, where that's where we're seeing it. And by the way, what they're deploying in the rural areas is not exactly the millimeter waves. It's a the bandwidth that's lower than 4G, but apparently quite harmful to living beings. And that's being put on the towers all along the highways and everything.
So given the money and power and control behind 5G, I would guess that there's this science involved in this contagion business is not going to be very real. It's going to be very unreal, because nobody, if what you say is true, nobody's going to want us to know that.
Exactly. I mean, this 5G has been coming for a long time. Back, I think it was in the late 1990s, a bill was passed to take $5 from every telephone bill and put it into wired technology so everybody could have Fios, basically, the internet in wires. And
which is a good place for it.
Which is a good place for it, and that's what we should do. That's what should be in schools. That's what should be in houses, in factories, in businesses, and so forth. And that wasn't done. A lot of that money was hijacked and used to develop 5G and to deploy 5G. And 5G seems like a simpler solution, so to speak. It's very, very fast. Let me give you an example. So when you go to a baseball game today, you can't use your cell phone in the stadium because everyone's trying to use their cell phone. You just can't get on. With 4G, there's just not enough bandwidth, right? But what they are planning is to put 5G in the stadiums, and then you can all use your cell phones. So you need 5G for tracking. You need it for the driverless cars. You need it for this idea of having a tattoo or radio frequency tattoo so you can track people who've been vaccinated, that kind of thing. And you can't do that with 4G. You need 5G for that.
Well, the irony in what you say is that you can go to the ballpark these days and use your cell phone because there's nobody there.
Right. So yes, you could go today and use your cell phone.
Now,
and there is a correlation with being with crowds. You remember the choir where a bunch of people got sick after choir practice?
Right, right.
Well, you have everybody close together. Everyone has a cell phone in their pocket or under their chair and their purse. And you probably have some kind of cell phone tower or cell tower in the steeple. And everybody's close together and getting exposed to a lot of this EMF. And, it seems like they're just giving it to each other, right? But what it really is, it's a lot of people being exposed to the same thing.
Wow.
And so crowds are a problem.
Because of the number of cell phones.
Yes, yes.
There it is. Well, you talk in the contagion myth about the watery nature of our bodies.
Yes.
Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes.
Might help us.
Yes, right. So, you know, we think of our bodies as being made of physical stuff, but most of our bodies is water. And that water inside our cells is structured water, sort of like jello. You know, when you cut yourself, water doesn't come out. That's because the water is structured. And this jello is organized water that acts as wires. So every cell in your body has a little network of wires through this organized water. And the key is to keep that water in structure. We know that exposed to a router, water loses the structure in water shrinks by 15%. So your bodies are water, and exposed to a router or microwave radiation or whatever, it affects the water in your body. So how do we protect ourselves? Well, you know, how do we give that water a kind of good insulation, so to speak? And one way is to eat lots of saturated fats. No surprise there, because that ensures that your cell membranes are good and strong, and the water structures itself against the cell membranes. A lot of polyunsaturated oils, you're going to have floppy, leaky cell membranes, and your body will not hold an electric charge as well as if you've got good, strong cell membranes. So it makes sense that you would be more vulnerable to this type of millimeter radiation if the structure inside your body is not right.
So it seems like if you take drugs and get vaccines and you're making your body more vulnerable.
Yeah, well, and the people who are given these drugs are people who don't eat right, right? They've got diabetes, you know, they have what they call heart disease, you know, they have a lot of what they call pre-existing conditions or comorbidities.
That's what they say about COVID, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, right.
They had COVID. They had comorbidities.
Yeah, right. And these are the people who are most likely to get sick and to die. And by the way, again, people have said to us, "Oh, you're so cruel. You don't believe that these people are getting sick." And that is absolutely wrong. We know these people are getting sick. And one of the things that shows up on autopsy of people who've died of this disease is the lungs are completely disintegrated. There's hardly any lung tissue left. So it's
and
a very
why is
serious
that?
Thing.
But yeah. Why is that?
Well, I think it's several things. It's the blood is no longer able to carry enough oxygen, so the tissues aren't nourished. The glyphosate in the exhaust from biodiesel interferes with certain lung surfactants. The lung surfactants themselves to work have to be 100% saturated fats in them, and these people, you know, don't have that, so they're vulnerable to being just kind of zapped by the radiation.
Wow.
I mean, I don't have all the explanations right. or the reasons. I'm speculating here.
Sure.
But we cannot say, oh, this is just a bad case of the flu. Some people do recover, but we're also hearing about people who have kind of chronic COVID, where they're always feeling sick. They can't remember anything, you know. One of the symptoms is feeling fizzy in the body, feeling like electricity is going through your body.
Well, and there
that's
it is.
That's not a virus. And Michael, that's not a virus. Yeah.
But that's an electrical situation, which you talk about.
Yes.
And
yes.
All of those
yes.
cells being wired together. Yes. Well, Bechamp talked about human-directed therapies. Is that not what we need?
We absolutely need. I mean, the first thing I would say, if you are having these kind of symptoms, is get out in the country, get as far away from all this technology as you can. We have some very practical advice about what should happen in your house. Your house, the internet should be wired. Your computer should plug in. You turn off your router so you're not subjected to that all day, but particularly when you sleep. You don't want your cell phone in your room. You don't want your computer in your room. And you also have things like dirty electricity, so you don't want your bedroom at the place in your house where the, you know, the meter is and the electricity.
So you're in your bedroom where you sleep. And sleep is so important, is it not?
Yeah. Yes, yes. Even something as simple as not having an electric alarm clock by your head at your bed can help you with your sleep. You know, have a little battery alarm clock. Don't have an electric.
Or one of those wind-up ones that go tick. Talk,
there you
tick,
go. And you certainly don't want to be in a hospital with all of that electric equipment right by your head. Who knows whether the hospital has 5G installed inside? You just don't know. But that's one of the worst places to be because you're just constantly being zapped.
Yeah, and with all of that equipment. And so what you're saying is that if we're clever, we can protect ourselves from COVID,
yes. Yes.
And it's probably not going to be with Louis Pasteur's science of the germ. It's going to be.
No, it's not going to be with a vaccination either.
It's going to be with Bechamp's human-directed yes. therapies, right. And that's going to be how we. Do you think we can beat this?
I think some people will survive. It's the people who are wise and figure out what to do. You're certainly not going to beat this by being in fear all the time because that makes you more vulnerable to illness.
And that seems to be what they're shoveling out in great quantities
to
everybody.
Goodness, yes.
Everybody
yes.
gets scared. Everybody hide. Yes. Everybody cover
yeah.
up. Everybody...
Yeah. Cover your face, you know, and when I see children with masks on, I want to just scream because that's really child abuse to make it so hard for children to breathe.
Is.
It actually affects their brains and kills brain tissue.
Sally Fallon Morrell, founder of Weston A. Price Foundation and co-founder of The Contagion Myth.
NourishingTraditions.com and DrTomCowan.com. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at MetroFarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.